we fix all the problems that we see with Solidity. Like, let's have a first-class representation of assets. Let's make sure that you can store them in data structures, you can return them, you can pass them as parameters.
All right, perfect. Hi, Sam. Welcome to the podcast. Tell us a little bit about your background. You were involved like at Facebook with the Libra project, right? And then you started Sui, basically. Maybe tell us a little bit how did that come?
Hey, Marco. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here. My background is as an academic computer scientist. I studied programming languages, static analysis, program verification. I did a PhD working on static analysis. I worked at Facebook in developer tools for many years. As part of working in developer tools, trying to build automated bug finding tools specifically, I'd had a lot of opinions about language design. And so in 2018, I got invited to join the Libra project to lead the effort to decide what Libra is going to do with smart contracts. So this is where the creation of Move came from. This is how I got to put a lot of ideas I had about language design and software safety to work. And then also how I got deeper into the crypto space. You know, I started off just leading the Move team and working on the design and implementation of Move. But then as I got deeper into integrating Move with Libra, I met distributed systems folks, cryptographers, started to look into what was going on elsewhere in the space and just got very, very interested and curious about other things. And after Libra hit a wall and it was clear it wasn't going to launch, the team we had been working on had a bunch of technology. It was a research team sort of building the next version of Libra based on the limitations of the initial system that was created. And we're like, you know, we should just jump out and launch this thing. So that was missed in late 2021. We put out the Sui testnet in spring 2022 and then got the mainnet out in May 2023. And, you know, we've been live for just about a year and a half now, building out a pretty excellent developer community that's really seeing the vision of what we're doing and using our technology in interesting ways. So yeah, it's an exciting time for us.
Yeah, amazing. And it's great to see like the Move language kind of prolonging after like the Libra project. But I'm curious, actually, going back to the time where you invented the language itself, like how did that come, and what's the process of even like inventing a new language?
Yeah, it's a great question. There certainly isn't a playbook for this. So it was a very nerve-wracking, but I think interesting time. So the mandate at Libra wasn't to create a new language necessarily. It was just like, we want Libra to be programmable and to have smart contracts. And so like, I basically got to decide what that meant. And so I looked at all sorts of different options before making the decision to create Move. Of course, took a careful look at Solidity and then Bitcoin Script, which were the two big languages at the time, understanding what are programmers trying to do with these? Where does the language help the programmer? Where is the language getting in the programmer's way or creating security issues? And then I also looked at adopting general purpose languages to work for smart contracts. We looked at Rust, we looked at Wasm, we looked at the JVM, we looked at all sorts of different options. And basically the conclusion came down to, for Solidity, like I never want to criticize it too much. It's the first effort at the Solidity and the EVM. It's the first effort at smart contract languages. But at the time it was designed, I think no one really knew what this stuff was going to be used for or what the problems would be. And I think like from a security perspective, there are just too many flaws that make it hard to write safe code and hard to be really productive really quickly. We fix all the problems that we see with Solidity. Like, let's have a first-class representation of assets. Let's make sure that you can store them in data structures. You can return them. You can pass them as parameters. Let's make sure you have safety guarantees. Like, you can't copy assets. If crypto is going to be a big thing, then it deserves a language that's designed specifically for the smart contract task that really has security in mind as the first principle.
And then is it fair to say that like Sui is basically like an implementation of the Move language, or like was Sui created in order to give the Move language like an environment? Is there more to the story basically?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a correct statement, but there is a little bit more to the story. And that when we jumped out of Libra, we of course looked at, you know, using the Libra system software, and then we looked at using Move. But we also, you know, similar to when deciding to create Move, we looked at all the different options. And what we ended up deciding is like, yes, we're going to use Move. Like, the core ideas here are good, but there's something we want to change about it. And that was, the original Libra was account-based, and Move also had this sort of notion of accounts baked in. And with Sui, what we decided to do is, you know, if you have sentences that are describing what people do on a blockchain, the nouns are objects, are assets, and then accounts are sort of the prepositional phrases. You know, this, you know, coin was sent by Mirko. Coin's the noun, you know, by Mirko is the prepositional phrase. And so really, like, as a programmer, like, you want to focus on the nouns. And so we reworked the Move data model to be based on objects instead of around accounts. And then at Libra, something that we did is we had very strong, like sort of API isolation in the teams. It's like you would say, oh, we're the storage team. Here's the API we're going to expose. And then we're the move team. Here's the APIs we're going to expose. And then the team sort of iterated independently within those API boundaries, but didn't sort of let abstractions cross boundaries. And with Sui, we said, we're going to knock those walls down. Like there's this concept of object and we're going to use it everywhere throughout the system instead of trying to hide it. So we use it in consensus to implement the Sui fast path for being able to skip full consensus for certain kinds of transactions. We use it in the API layers, like explorers and wallets show objects directly to users instead of indirecting through view functions. And of course we use it inside of Move itself. So that was basically the big change we made is we have Move, the core language, all the things were good about it, but then we added this new core abstraction and then use that everywhere else throughout the system to sort of squeeze the most that we can out of it.
Yeah, that's amazing. And then comparing it with other blockchains that also adopted the Move language, which is actually also very interesting to see, like now there's also other chains like that adopted Move, like Aptos and Movement are coming up. What's the differentiation there and what do you think about it? I mean, in general, it's probably great that there's multiple blockchains also adopting Move and it gets kind of more traction and maybe there will be like a Move renaissance or like a Move kind of movement in that sense across multiple blockchains. How do you see like the space of movement blockchains in general and how does Sui differentiate as well?
Yeah. Absolutely. Like, you know, as the creator, like I'm very proud to see this. You know, Move is the fastest growing smart contract language in crypto. It's now the third largest smart contract language behind the EVM and behind the SVM.
Are there any metrics actually that you have on like developer adoption? And
Yeah. So the Electric Capital Developer Report, I think, is the best source of data for developer activity in crypto. And they have a bunch of different metrics, but the main thing they look at is monthly active developers. And so when I say it's the fastest growing smart contract language or the third largest, I mean in terms of monthly active developers. And so like its trajectory over the past year has been like quite ascendant. And I think I'd expect that to continue. Like from the beginning, the vision we had for Move is that one of the things we didn't like about the EVM is it's very overfitted to the way the Ethereum platform works. Like the notion, the transaction structure, the cryptography that's used, even the consensus, these are all exposed directly to the smart contract language. And so if you're trying to build a new EVM chain, you're sort of inheriting a lot of the Ethereum design decisions. And that makes innovation difficult. And, you know, to make things scale, we need to change a lot of things. We need the freedom to do experimentation. So we tried to make Move this sort of pluggable language where the core language is simple, it doesn't know or care anything about the underlying blockchain. And then you can add this adapter layer on top of it where you add the concepts that your blockchain has chosen for execution, for transactions, for cryptography and whatever else. And so Sui embeds Move in a certain way, Aptos and Movement do it in a different way. And I think, you know, other chains that are coming later, like, you know, Supra is another Move chain that's come out, like is doing it in yet another way. And we think that's great. Like we want developers to be able to use Move while having the flexibility to innovate however they want to at the systems layer. And we think the space is so early that people really need to try out a lot of different designs.
Yeah. Are the different chains compatible as well? Similar as in EVM, you have like Binance Smart Chain is fully compatible with Ethereum and so on. Is that a fair comparison?
Yeah, so they're not directly compatible. And that is maybe the trade-off here where if you're allowed to do things differently, like, you know, Aptos, for example, is account-based. And so like, you know, if you look at Aptos code, there's a lot of stuff that's talking about accounts, whereas like you would not see that in Sui. So I'd say like, if you're a developer who's trying to build on multiple, it's not like you can just port your code over directly, but a lot of the programming experience, a lot of the tooling, a lot of, I think the mental model especially is somewhat similar across each of them. And so it is kind of interesting that way. It's like, you know, if you know Lisps, there's like multiple dialects of Lisp. It's sort of like each chain has its own mini dialect. Some libraries will be compatible, some will not. That's the way the ecosystem is.
I really want to dig into this a bit because in my head, I always have the tag word of like parallel execution as like one of the main innovations of Sui as well, next to like besides Move, basically. I would love to dig into it a little bit, like what role does this actually play? And maybe you can talk about this a little bit. And is my assumption correct that like parallel execution is basically one of the key innovations that Sui brings in order like to deliver like a very fast blockchain?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. Like parallel execution is a very important part of Sui's scaling story. Now, I think like calling it innovative at this point, like I think the next 100 blockchains that exist will all have parallel execution or they won't be competitive. And Sui wasn't the first. Like, you know, Solana has parallel execution. Aptos came out earlier and has parallel execution. Monad's been in development for years now and has it. So this is just, you know, if you have a single process, if you have a single processor, no matter how much you optimize it, there's only so many transactions you're going to be able to shove through it. So the way you need to be able to scale is you farm work out to multiple cores. And, you know, someday, if we're successful, even all the cores that a single machine has won't be enough. We'll need to be able to farm out to multiple machines like Web2 giants do to scale. And so I think, although we're not unique in having parallel execution, I think the way SWE does parallel execution is unique and innovative. So one of the things it does is what I mentioned, where we designed from the beginning with horizontal scalability in mind, so that there's a prototype the research team has worked on called Pilotfish, and there's a paper on this where we show that you can take a SWE validator and run it on a single box, spread transactions across multiple cores, or you can make a validator consist of multiple boxes, and the throughput you get increases linearly with the number of boxes you allocate. So this is, and then importantly, they show when you do this, latency doesn't increase. You get the same performance. And this is basically the secret sauce that makes this possible, is this object-centric data model I mentioned. The SWE state consists of objects, transactions, say the objects that they're going to touch. And so you can sort of shard the object state across these boxes so that you know, oh, if I want to touch this object, I send it to this box for execution. If I want to touch this other one, I send it here. And that doesn't work as well in the way these other chains work. They really rely on having observers within a single machine that are coordinating what's going on between the threads. So that's something that's unique about SWE. And then one other thing is, you know, we hear a lot about parallel execution, and folks will say, you know, oh, like, I'll just get a nice parallel workload and I'll be able to throw it across all the cores and things will be great. But the thing is, there's nothing that forces your users to give you a nicely parallelizable workload. They might give you a bunch of transactions that are all hitting the same hot DEX pool or doing the same hot NFT mint. And so you really need not just the parallel execution technology, but the economic feedback loop that makes transactions hitting hot state expensive and then lets transactions that are nicely parallelizable be cheap and continue to run fast. And so SWE has this really interesting implementation of object-centric fee markets where we're able to basically do exactly that. If there's congestion in one part of the system, then those users will suffer, but everything else keeps running smoothly and running very fast. And we have fee adjustments to make it so when there's congestion, the fees rise there and those folks have to pay more, and it sort of forces the congestion to back off, whereas elsewhere the fees stay nice and low. So when I think about blockchain scaling, I think this local fee markets problem is really the thing folks are going to hit before, you know, even saturating all of the cores, just because the nature of the use cases is, yeah, you have things that are really hot because there's profitable opportunities to be had in, say, doing a hot trade or hitting a liquidation, and you just have to make sure the system performs well in those circumstances.
Ethereum is then the only one that doesn't have parallel execution. Would there be any process to introduce this in Ethereum, you think? Or
So not in core Ethereum. I mean, I think it's just too hard to make major changes. Monad is trying to add parallel execution to the EVM. Now, like they've had to make very significant changes in terms of changing the database, changing the transaction structure. It's basically been a multi-year research project, and I think they've done a very good job. It's going to be interesting to see what comes out. But I think even then, you know, this problem I mentioned of you need to get a nicely parallelizable workload, I think the EVM data model is just not very good for writing parallelism-friendly code. It encourages you to write code that's causing contention on the same piece of shared state, you know, a big mapping. Whereas with objects, like the way it works is it really, I'm not going to quite say forces, but it almost forces like programmers to write things in as fine-grained of a way as possible. You don't want your program to be touching a lot of different objects because then it gets annoying for you as a programmer. And so you sort of make things as isolated as you can. So I think the parallelism in the EVM is something that may come, not to core Ethereum, it'll come in Monad. But for us, like, we had the advantage of designing what this is a goal from the beginning.
And what is the difference actually between parallel execution and sharding? Is that kind of related, or what's the interplay there?
Yeah, they're not related. I guess what I would say is you can do parallel execution on a single machine. You don't need the capability to do sharding. But if you want to be able to do parallel execution across multiple machines, then you'll need to have a scheme both for sharding execution and for sharding state.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. So yeah, I would really love to dig a little bit like further into like the like SUI itself and staking as well. SUI is like the third biggest proof of stake chain actually right now. It's like, I think, let me pull up the number, like 35 billion staking market cap. It's like almost catching up to Solana already. Has been like performing very well as well. And also has like a lot of validators, a lot of high profile validators as well. But there have also been like some critiques around like centralization of stake. So I would love to like dig into this a little bit and also hear like what are your thoughts and like what is the strategy from the founding team and foundation as well in regards to like decentralizing stake, and what role does it actually play for Sui, for the team, for the project? Like which role does staking play, and also like how important is the decentralization of stake? And yeah, what are measures and metrics that you guys look at in terms of like, or how do you define success, for example?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is one of these things. Well, first of all, like we think decentralization of stake is extremely important, and we think it's especially important for system robustness. Like I think the thing that you have to worry about the most with these proof of stake networks is there's a failure in a single data center region. There's, you know, a vulnerability that exists in a particular kind of hardware provider. There's a power outage that's going to happen. There's a country that decides to ban staking or ban a particular network. And, you know, these things actually happen in practice. And like each of those, like, you know, a cloud provider will decide, you know, we're going to shut down everything. You know, these actually happen. And so, you know, they're not like these sort of boogeymen that people worry about that don't actually happen. So I'd say those are the metrics that we care about the most. So we have the Sui validators have voting power that are spread across 40 different regions with no more than 13% of. And when I say voting power, stake, it's sort of interchangeable. We just like talking about voting power and that voting power is normalized to 10,000 units in Sui. And basically you achieve consensus if, or you commit something if you get greater than 6,666 units of voting power. Whereas like stake, you know, the total amount can fluctuate. So it gets very confusing to talk about like, you know, what's meaningful stake and what's not. So I'll use them interchangeably, but stake or voting power is spread across 40 different regions with no more than 13% in a single region, also spread across 22 countries with no more than 21% in a single country. The Sui Nakamoto coefficient is 17, which isn't as high as we'd like, but it's competitive with, you know, these other high performance networks like Solana's is 18, for example. So I think over time, like I'd like to see the voting power spread out across even more regions and more countries. We'd like to see the Nakamoto coefficient go up, but at the end of the day, like Sui is a year and a half old, and like these things take a little bit of time to happen. We're also making some changes to the validator emission process for Sui, where right now it's based on a minimum amount staked, which we think is too high, and we're changing it to be a voting power based threshold, where there's the SIP39 change that will hopefully go out in the next release or two, where what that says is, if you have enough stakes such that you would have at least 1 point of voting power, or sorry, 3 points of voting power, then you can join. And that'll be great because it's sort of like the minimum possible bar. There's no point in allowing a validator to join if it's not going to have any voting power because they literally have no influence. But we'll just sort of make that bar as low as it can possibly be.
And which role does the foundation play? I think you also have a large foundation delegation program, right? Maybe you can also touch a little bit on that and like what's the role of the foundation in order to ensure stake decentralization, and how do you see that playing out over the next years as well in terms of the foundation holding a large amount of Sui and then deciding who to stake with and having pretty much a very large role in further decentralizing the network as well?
Yeah, so I'm at Mist and Labs, and the stake delegation program is a Sui Foundation thing, but I can tell you what I know about it, which is I think like this is a program where the foundation, like any foundation of a new chain, is going to hold a large amount of the tokens at the beginning. And so the stake delegation program delegates to help validators get started. I think they base it on criteria such as definitely performance. That's the most important. You can't have validators that are slow or that are hurting network performance. But then also a lot about community value added. I think they like staking with Sui projects or folks who are building and developing in the community or have skin in the game, and not just as compared to, you know, being an infra provider who does something valuable, but you know, you just do this across a lot of different chains. And I think they also look at if there are criteria, say like the region diversity or data center diversity that we talked about, that's easiest to do via a program like the delegation program, where you have a top level view and you're trying to decide between allocating stake to validator A versus validator B. You could be like, well, B is going to give us a new region, whereas A would not, and these sorts of things. You can use that as a tiebreaker, say, if they both perform well. So again, it's a Sui Foundation program, but I think basically like they probably want to improve on all the metrics that I mentioned, while also making sure that their teams that are getting started on Sui and have skin in the game can support the network and be part of the validator set.
Yeah, that's amazing. For like a new validator, what would be a great way to get like inside the SUI set, you think? What would be the best strategy for someone to tap into SUI, basically, as like running a validator node there?
Yeah, so I think the best way is to be a prominent SUI builder. So a lot of the SUI DeFi builders, for example, are validators. Some folks who work, you know, as dev shops for SUI. I think that's really the best way, is just like folks who are adding value elsewhere in the community. And then that makes it really easy to become a validator, because you're already aligned with everything that's important to SUI.
Does Mysten Labs actually run validators as well?
Yeah, Mysten Labs runs 2 validators.
Amazing. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, obviously, I guess the ecosystem alignment is very important to also get Absolutely. Delegations and so on. Yeah. I mean, that being said, like SUI has been performing very well in the last few weeks, also like catching up. I guess, like, where do you see your competition in a sense? Like, do you even look at Ethereum? Is that something that you see as a competition, or do you more compare yourself only with Solana? I guess also like Solana and Ethereum are playing like different leagues in a way, like they have different approaches. And I guess you would fall more into like competing with Solana, right?
Yeah, I mean, so we don't really think of like, you know, oh, this specific team is our competitor, that specific team is. I mean, this is a crowded space. There are a lot of really great networks and great communities out there. And I think we learn different. We do look at what they're doing, and we sort of learn different things from each of them. But really, like, SUI has its own vision, which is to be the best smart contract developer platform. I think we're way more focused on developer experience and on end user accessibility via technology like ZK login, and just trying to enable the apps that actually, you know, have massive user growth with bring folks from outside of crypto, not just trying to absorb use cases and teams from elsewhere. So that's what we spend the most time thinking about. But of course, like folks are going to compare you to everyone, both like existing networks and newer networks. And we have learned, and I think do have a lot to learn from Ethereum, from Solana, from all the folks who do things really well, and from, you know, new folks like Monad. They're doing interesting stuff from a tech perspective.
But do you have a special focus on the go-to-market? For example, what role does the gaming play? You just released the SUI Play, which is, it looks like a PlayStation Portable, basically. And it's quite interesting. Also, like Solana, they launched a Solana phone, right? So it's very interesting to see like blockchains launching like specialized hardware as well. So what role does like the hardware play for you guys? But also like especially the gaming industry, is this like a particular focus where you see SUI has like a very strong fit? Or
Yeah, I mean, happy to talk about both of those. So starting with the hardware question specifically. So the hardware isn't created by Mysten Labs. There's a developer called Playtron, who the founders are some of the folks behind the Android operating system. So they really know devices and they really know operating systems. And so the SUI Play is, I think that sometimes it definitely gets compared to the Solana phone, but ultimately it's a distribution play where these folks have created an operating system for handheld gaming devices. And we think a lot of games in the future are going to want to have native blockchain integration for assets, for accounts. And so basically it's a bet on that. We think, you know, the next 500, if things go well, the next 500 successful handheld gaming devices will use the Playtron operating system, and then the Playtron operating system will use SUI. So it's a little bit of a bundling approach like that. And the SUI Play is merely the first such device and sort of a proof point that this thing can work well. And so we're really, really excited about that, both as the first device that looks like this, but even more excited about the future of having this operating system built by folks who really know what they're doing, have broad distribution, and have SUI under the hood for anything blockchain related. Now, on gaming, you know, this is a sector we've cared about and talked about since the very beginning. I think it's taken a little longer than we've expected to materialize. Like the development and testing timelines for games are so long. There's a lot of work that goes into building a modern competitive game. It's just not something you can whip together quickly. But it's worth investing in, because games, even like not very successful games, have so many users compared to anything that runs on blockchains today. Like even a game that's not very successful probably has more users than all chains combined. And the other thing is, like, every time you have a new technology platform, and I think smart contract platforms, despite being around for a while, are still very much in this nascent state, gaming developers are some of the most creative in terms of figuring out how to use this new technology. You know, games were some of the first to mobile. Games are some of the first to figure out how to use the internet well. And I think it's the same thing with smart contract platforms. And so there's going to be a lot of experimentation, you know, folks trying stuff. Some of it's going to work, some of it's not going to work. But I think like the entrepreneurial and creative history of game developers, plus like the big user base prize that sits behind it, makes this a vertical that's really worth focusing on. And so we're continuing to do that and have some pretty exciting launches this year.
Do you want to like give a little bit of outlook for like the gaming projects that are developing on Sui and going to be integrated with Sui Play maybe as well?
Yeah, you know, you should really have on Adani to, I think, to do a deep dive on the Sui Play and some of those gaming projects. Like, I feel like if I start talking about just one or two of them, then I'll give the other ones short shift. And there's like such a big list of stuff that's coming out this year. So I'll maybe defer.
All right. Yeah, no worries. But in general, like maybe you can give a more broad outlook for like 2025. What is like the important milestones and developments that you guys are working towards to in this year?
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of the verticals that we care about, you know, milestones, goals. So I'll talk about a couple of different things. I guess let's talk about like product since we're already there. So what's working well in Sui? So first of all, we want to take what's working well on Sui today and continue to pour fuel in the fire. So DeFi is definitely like number one on that list. We recently crossed 2 million TV out for the first time. There are DeFi builders that are taking advantage of Sui's programmability, of Sui's performance, a lot of new interesting launches that are coming there. And so we want to do that, but also continuing to expand into industries that are sort of more conventional that can take advantage of DeFi. So we care a lot about institutional finance, real world assets, you know, the issuance of new things on chain, being able to tap into DeFi liquidity or DeFi user bases. I think we care a lot about that. Also commerce, we've recently, just finally after a long time, recently gotten a lot of the stable coins we've been looking at. We had USDC added this year. That's basically a prereq for doing any sort of commerce or payment story. And we think there too, there's interesting things to be done in terms of tapping into DeFi. So those are areas we care about a lot from sort of like the product and GTM perspective. For more of like the core tech and network perspective, I think increasingly folks are looking at fee revenue as a way to measure blockchains and see what's happening. I think that's very fair. Like that's maybe one of the best metrics for how much are folks demanding block space and the applications on your network based on how much they're willing to pay for it. So something we're really focused on, especially in the first quarter, is when we look at other networks and where fees come from. Base fees are a small fraction of it, but a lot of it is priority fees for MEV and for searchers. And I think that's somewhere where we've made some good developments on the tech front, but there are just like some changes we can make that will really improve the Sui for searchers and folks working on MEV and for DeFi. And it's like there's the SIP 45 change that's coming out that makes gas, that allows gas fees to work in a different way so that you can express a strong preference to be first in line to hit a liquidation or touch a hot trading pool or just more generally like to be top of block. And so we think that's going to be huge in terms of driving Sui transaction revenue and promoting more MEV activity on Sui. So that's something we're really excited about as well.
Yeah. So it sounds like the protocol development is also like extremely active.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's still evolving very quickly. We have Mista Set EV2 coming out. We have a whole set of features in Move 2025. We have the Move registry, which is sort of like NPM or crace.io for Move, like a place where you give your open source code human readable names. You can now build against those human readable names in your source files. Explorers and wallets will be able to see like, you know, the name of code, the project instead of an address, like all sorts of like core improvements, developer improvements, usability improvements. So yeah, definitely keep marching forward there.
Yeah, amazing. No, it's very exciting. And also like, I think it's such an inspiring story for you to like create Move as a language, just like the Libra project many years ago. And now it's like the building block of like a full blockchain ecosystem that's developing around the Move language and Sui as well. So yeah, very, very inspiring. And it's great to hear. Sorry, I'm very excited for everything that comes next as well.
Yeah, it's surreal. I feel really, really fortunate. You know, I get to spend so much of my day talking to developers and they love Move and they love Sui. They have ideas for how to make it better. So yeah, my job satisfaction is very high. I'm super lucky.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, it's probably not what you were thinking about when you initially created Move, right? Yeah.
No. And that's the thing, you know, I think that's when you know you've done a good job with something like a programming language, it's you define a set of simple primitives, but ultimately like what you want is people to surprise you with how they compose those simple primitives into something new, into something creative, you know, take on a life of its own. You can't possibly anticipate all the things that people are going to do. And Move is definitely at that threshold now. I get surprised every day.
Yeah. And I also somehow I have a feeling like people are very passionate about Move, right? It's like, this is one of the things I think that you guys did very well, or like that the language does very well somehow to make people very excited about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's really like with these developer tools, you know, if you're a programmer and you've spent a lot of years, you really just know the difference between something where, yeah, it gets the job done, but, you know, it's sort of a struggle, or even like, you know, it gets out of your way, but, you know, it's not really helping you either. And so, you know, I've spent a career prior to working in crypto, like doing this kind of thing. And I just really understand the difference between like how happy it makes you to work with a tool that's purpose built for what you're trying to do and that really understands you and is actively helping you versus one that, you know, is getting in your way or just sort of like neutral. And so that was something I really, really wanted for Move. And so I'm super happy that we've succeeded in that. Yeah, it's very satisfying to see how fanatical people are about the language.
Amazing. Cool. Yeah, thanks a lot, Sam. Really, really excited for everything that's coming up. And thanks for being on the show.
Totally. Thanks so much for having me, Mirko. This was really enjoyed the conversation and I appreciate your time.